So a couple of years ago, shortly after we had moved into this building, Chad and I did a couple of sermons on Sabbath. And we were so new to the building that because Anchor has a pulpit in the middle of the stage most Sundays, we started preaching from the pulpit. And after a couple of meetings, decided we did not like that at all. And we weren't going to do that anymore. But I remember doing one of the Sabbath sermons from the pulpit. And if you read the Tuesday email and saw that I was going to be preaching on Sabbath this week, you might have groaned. Because when I did preach on those a couple of years ago, it was hard for some folks to really get their minds around ceasing from work one day a week. Because for us modern Americans, the idea of devoting an entire day every week to ceasing from labor is something that is so foreign that we just assume it can't possibly be a biblical command for us today. Because we're constantly looking for more ways to be productive, not fewer ways to be productive. When we look at our week, typically what we look at is Monday through Friday is for work and school, and then we have Saturday and Sunday, which are our two weekend days. And Saturdays are typically stuffed with extracurricular activities and sports and get-togethers and home projects and things like that. And then Sunday becomes a catch-all for all the things that we didn't get to Monday through Saturday and getting ready for the week ahead. That's how typically we experience Sundays. Your calendar will typically show Sunday as the first day of the week, right? But who experiences Sunday as the first day of the week? Like what really launches you into your work and school? I think very few of us do. Instead, it's just the day that becomes where we get to everything that we couldn't get to before. And I mentioned a couple of years ago when we were going through this that our weeks are a lot like boxes, like long boxes. A week begins on Monday, and then we steadily progress toward the weekend. And Saturday and Sunday come, and at the end of Sunday, the week is over, the box is done, and we put the box on a shelf, and we open up a box, a new box, for the next week. And for a lot of us, that's why Sunday nights and Mondays are so hard, because it's opening up a new box, and it's so far until the weekend is actually going to come. And when we look at it this way, Sabbath just does not fit. When we look at our weeks as Monday through Friday with Saturday and Sunday at the end, Sabbath just does not fit. There's not enough room in the box to actually observe a day where we don't do any labor. Because modern life is what it is, then, we just assume that the commandment to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy is something that just can't possibly apply because our modern lives don't in any way support it. To which I think there are two important things to consider. If we just have written off the idea of ceasing for a day because our modern lives don't support it, there are two things I think we should consider. First, when you look at the Ten Commandments as a whole, the other nine commandments are still fully in force. Okay? No gods before me, no taking the Lord's name in vain, no idols, honoring father and mother, no killing, stealing, bearing false witness, adultery, coveting, all the other nine are still in force. So that fact alone, I think, should give us pause before we just dismiss the Sabbath out of hand. Second, there was a death penalty associated with being a Sabbath breaker. And anytime there's a death penalty associated with one of the laws, we would do well to pay attention to that law. When in Numbers 15, there's a man who's executed for gathering sticks on the Sabbath. And I would suggest that he probably had a bad heart and he was not trusting God. And that's why he was gathering sticks on the Sabbath. But he was executed for it. And so when in the Old Testament the death penalty is associated with the law, we should be careful to not just casually dismiss it as not being applicable. And in those sermons a couple of years ago, what we wanted to do was to get to the heart of the Sabbath command. What's the heart behind the Sabbath command? Why did God give this commandment to Israel? What does it say about God that he gave this commandment to Israel? How is God's love expressed through the giving of the Sabbath? What is it not only about God's human creatures that requires rest, but also the beasts of the field that need Sabbath? Because part of the command is that the animals also are not to work. And are we missing anything that God intends for us to have if we don't observe Sabbath in some way? And that's what I want to revisit tonight. Kind of that last question of, is there anything that we're missing that God intends for us to have if we don't observe Sabbath in some way? So just to make sure we're on the same page, let's revisit the commandment as it's given in Deuteronomy chapter 5, 12 through 15. Moses says, "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." So Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which means to cease, to stop. And the Israelites were to work 6 days and then cease from their labors on the Sabbath and take a day of rest. And not just the Israelites, but also the ox, the donkey, and the livestock, and even the foreigners among them. All operations were to completely cease on the Sabbath. That's what it meant to keep the fourth commandment. Now, let me give you my thesis. I don't know whether observing the Sabbath day and keeping it holy is a binding commandment upon Christians today. There are some who are completely convinced that it is, and there are some who are completely convinced that it's not. And I'm not going to try to answer that question tonight. But I do have four observations about the commandment as it's given that I think we would do well to pay attention to. And so here's the first one. Number one is that Sabbath is an invitation. It's an invitation. In the passage that Nick read, Jesus said in verse 27 of Mark 2, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." The Sabbath was made for man. It's a gift that God himself gave to Israel, who had been a nation of slaves. Israel had just been a tool in Pharaoh's hand to accomplish all of Pharaoh's projects. But God had delivered Israel from slavery, and then he invited them into what he says are my Sabbaths. He invites them into his own rest. When we read about God resting on the seventh day of creation, God invites Israel into that. And when Jesus says the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, he knows that the Father is redrawing the lines of who is really Israel around himself. He knows that the Father is doing that. He knows that they will no longer be justified by keeping the law, but by faith in him. And yet he says in verse 28, "So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." Lord of the Sabbath. He doesn't say that the Sabbath is going away. Jesus is Lord even of the Sabbath, but he's not getting rid of it. Now, the Sabbath isn't going to look like how it looked when Israel was in the wilderness and then when they were in the Promised Land. But the Sabbath was made for man, and that invitation to rest still remains. I think we should consider for a moment that Jesus knew that he would have a short amount of time with his disciples to accomplish his mission. He was the long-awaited Messiah, and he only had a couple of years to proclaim the kingdom, that the kingdom had come, and prepare his disciples to make more disciples. How would we approach that task if we knew we just had three and a half years to do something so monumental? How would we approach it? I think we'd have a constantly loaded calendar. Constant meetings, no time for rest. I think we would just be going and going and going. And yet here's Jesus with his disciples. In Mark 6, he says, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place
and rest a while. For they were coming, for many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. Or after his resurrection, when they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." And he said to them, "Come and have breakfast." And then in Matthew 11, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you a 4-page job description with metrics and deliverables. And just forget about rest and leisure and work-life balance, because we got a mission to do and we can't waste any time." That's not what he says. He says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath, and he wasn't in a hurry then, and he's not in a hurry now. He still invites us to rest. Number two, God designed us to require rest. Observing Sabbath is an invitation, but that doesn't entirely mean that it's optional. Let me use an analogy from a different part of the law. So we've read the food commands in Leviticus and in Deuteronomy. You read about clean and unclean animals, all the things that the Israelites were not supposed to eat. And we know that we who are in Christ don't have to abide by those laws. And so now we can chow down on bearded vulture and bats and camels and barn owls and all those other disgusting things that we really wouldn't want to eat anyway that were on the unclean lists. So we can eat those now. But let's broaden it out, okay? We also know that there are a lot of foods that are just plain unhealthy. They have no nutrition to them whatsoever. And so the question could be asked, is it wrong or is it sinful to eat things that we know have no nutritional value and are really only not good for you? Is it a sin to eat Twinkies or Takis or Pop-Tarts or anything on the Hardee's menu at all? Well, no, it's not a sin, because Jesus declared all foods clean in Mark 7:19. Says Jesus declared all foods clean. So you and I can eat whatever we want to, and it's not a sin. Of course, we're free to eat whatever we want to, but we're not free to choose the consequences that come with eating whatever we want to. If you eat only junky food, there will be consequences to your body in the short term and almost certainly in the long term. And we just know this to be true. And I think the same is true with Sabbath. Intentionally ceasing for a day-long period, it may not be a sin to be ambitious and completely pack your schedule over 7 days with work and meetings and sports and extracurriculars, projects, events, service, and travel, but there will be consequences, short-term and long-term, because God designed us to require rest. That's how he made us. Not just sleep, but weekly ceasing from our labors. God built us that way. Now, you might think that that's a design flaw, but if that's the case, you're going to have to take it up with God, because God's the one who made us that way. And Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath, and he hasn't gotten rid of it yet, so we can't say that we don't need it. I think what Solomon wrote in Psalm 127 applies not only to sleep, but also to rest as well. He says, "It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep, and he gives to his beloved rest." Number three, observing Sabbath is an invitation to a different kind of life. It's a different kind of life from what is quote unquote normal in our culture. If you start a casual conversation with somebody, it could be inside the church, could be outside the church, and you ask somebody how they've been, they are very likely to answer busy. They're likely to say, things have just been really busy. Yeah, we've just been going, going, going. Because, by and large, we are busy. We're active, We're capable people, and so we can make our time go a long way, and we can achieve a lot of good things. There's nothing wrong with being busy. And so please don't walk away from this sermon thinking that I'm saying that being busy is wrong. It's not. Busy is simply reflected by what's on our calendars, the places where we are, what we're doing at any point in the week. And for most of us, our calendars are going to be full and we're going to be doing a lot of things. But I suspect that when a lot of us say that we're busy, kind of behind the word is that we're weary. It's that we are really tired and we're weary. And weariness comes from running and running and running and running, and that constant motion becomes the norm. And that just becomes the way that we live life. And it's just going and going and going and going. And life becomes a blur, and you have no idea when things are actually going to settle down. And there's not enough time to slow down and digest what's going on in your own life and in the life of those who are around you. And, you know, sometimes we'll tell ourselves, well, things will be better when things slow down, right? Does anybody subscribe to that mythical things slowing down line? There was somebody who I respect who once said, you know, do you know when things settle down? Things settle down when you die. That's when things settle down. You'll be amazed how slow the pace is going to become once you're dead. But probably not until then. Things don't just settle down. Now, we all have to endure sprints in our lives. There are seasons where we do have to sprint. Intense periods of activity that are hectic. But sprints are meant to be short, and you know where the finish line is. When you're doing a sprint, you can see where the finish line is. And you give it your all for a brief period, and then you recover. That's what a sprint is. But for a lot of us, our calendars reflect running at a very high speed for a prolonged amount of time. And when there's no end in sight, that's what causes profound weariness. Several of us ran in the Bluegrass 10,000 yesterday in downtown Lexington. It was very humid. It was very uncomfortable to run. But we all knew that after 6.2 miles, it was done. We knew where the finish line was. We could see it when we started the race. And there gives great confidence in knowing, okay, only this many miles to go, and then it's done. But if you were to start a race and you were to ask how long it was, then they would say, we don't know. Just run. And just run, and we'll just tell you when to stop. That would be very disheartening to run in that kind of a race when you don't know when it's actually going to end. But when we intentionally take one day a week to cease from our labors and recover and replenish, we can be busy in the other 6 days and we can sprint and we won't become weary because God has built a finish line into the week. He's put the finish line there and we can see it. I think we should also wonder, what does it say about us if we are just as weary as our non-Christian neighbors? And what does it say about our God if we're just as weary as our non-Christian neighbors? Pharaoh didn't give the Israelites any rest, and he prevented them from ceasing their labors. And he said that they were lazy, and he compounded their work. He doubled the amount of work that they would have to do. And so I think we need to ask God to reveal to us if there's any little Pharaoh in our heart that causes us to just keep going and keep going and keep going and make those in our families and those around us keep going too and not give any rest. And number four, Sabbath invites us to joyfully receive the gift of limits. Limits are a gift. The Bible praises being industrious, working like the ant, says in Proverbs. But for a set time each week, we are invited to joyfully lay aside all the things that we strive for. We cease from activity that advances our agenda, our goals, our prosperity, our projects, our sense of security. We let all of those sit undone for a time, and we ground ourselves in the reality that we are loved for and cared for perfectly by our Father in heaven. And we don't like limits, as a human race, we don't like limits. We don't like limits on our time. We don't like limits on our resources. We don't like limits on our physical bodies and how we can't do certain things that we maybe want to do. Our bodies need to eat and sleep. They're not machines. They don't just go and go and go. And so we strive to transcend those limits. And that's not always bad. But the world can only give us tips and tricks to get around our limits. God gives us the Sabbath. God invites us into rest. He commands us out of the hamster wheel of our own lives and reminds us that we have enough because we have Him. But our drive to secure for ourselves is strong. And we always run the risk of thinking that we need just a little bit more. We need just a little bit more. The Sabbath was made for man to cease from all that, for his good and for the good of everyone around him. Okay, I'm sure y'all have some questions in talking about the Sabbath, and I've tried to anticipate some of those questions. So I had 4 points, and now I have 4 questions that I've tried to anticipate. So number one, does a Christian observance of Sabbath have to be on a Sunday? And the shorter answer is no, but here's why a lot of us do observe it on Sunday. This comes from Mark 16. When the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. The day of Jesus' resurrection was the first day of the week. And the Sabbath had occurred the day before. And from roughly that time on, the first day of the week became known as the Lord's Day, because that's when the Lord Jesus was raised from the dead. And so in Revelation 1:10, John says that he was on the island of Patmos, and he says, "I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day." This is Sunday. Jesus was raised on Sunday, the first day of the week. The church is worshipped on this day, and John is worshipping on this day as Revelation opens. And it seems that the church took everything that was good in the Sabbath and imported it over into Sunday, the first day of the week. All that was good about the Sabbath took on a different meaning in the light of Jesus' resurrection. So Sunday became the day of worship and the day of rest. And this reflects the church as a new creation with a new covenant and new rules. And so notice the difference. Israel, as a nation, had to observe the rules of the Sabbath exactly. There was really not much wiggle room in how Israel observed the Sabbath. They were given specific rules, and God expected them to keep those rules. But in Jesus, God has brought together Jew and Gentile, and so the particulars around Sabbath have fallen away. What day of the week it's on, what counts as work, and thank goodness, the death penalty for breaking it. That no longer applies either. We're free to observe the heart of the commandment, the fact that God the Father invites us into rest, and we can do so within the freedom of a good conscience. We aren't bound to a particular day of Sabbath keeping. Question number two, what about moms whose work is never done? Absolutely fair question. It does no good for a family to observe the Sabbath if all of the work falls on the mother to make it happen. And this is where the husband's duty is to learn what needs to happen during the week so that everybody can enjoy Sabbath together. The husband leads the family in that initiative to work together so that the Sabbath is something for everyone. And this can mean making meals the day before or ordering takeout on the day, getting school stuff ready the days before, figuring out what chores need to be done on that day and getting everybody involved. But the main thing is that for the husband, it means setting the vision, having the vision for taking that day to cease from work and for the whole family to be involved, to communicate why it's a different day, what it means, and then leading the family in a way that allows everyone to rest. The Sabbath command, if we go back to Deuteronomy 5, it was really aimed at the heads of household, because it says, on that day you shall do no work, also your family members shall do no work, your animals shall do no work, and your servants shall do no work. So it was aimed at the heads of the household. And so the heads of household, the husband needs to work together with the wife to figure out how everybody can participate, and it doesn't just fall on the mother. It does no good to say, well, I'm celebrating the Sabbath, going to play golf, you're home with the kids. That's not observing the Sabbath faithfully. Number three, what do I do with all the time? I think this question shows that we don't have much of a talent for relaxation. I think we're very good at diversions and time wasters and just kind of mindlessly engaging things, but not much of a talent for knowing how to enter into real replenishing rest. So here are some ideas. Family meetings are a good way to spend part of the Sabbath. Reading scripture together, worshiping together, talking about who you are as a family and what God's called you to. Taking a walk, not necessarily for exercise or to listen to a podcast, but to be God's creature in creation with your Creator. It reminds us that like Enoch and Noah, we walk with God. And Jesus and his friends in the passage that Nick read, they were out on a walk when the Pharisees, I always kind of imagine them like popping up out of nowhere, having spied on Jesus and his friends, just popping up saying, ha ha, you're breaking the Sabbath. But they were taking a walk. And so taking a walk is a great idea. Family puzzles and games, whatever doesn't involve a screen, but I think also whatever doesn't involve intense competition, because that can kind of take away from the spirit of rest. Something that you can work on together and enjoy just being together. Beautify your house and your yard if you enjoy that kind of thing. If your idea of a good time is sitting on a riding mower for 3 hours, then have at it. If that's really relaxing to you, then do it. For some people, just doing simple projects around the house is a good time. It's relaxing. It's not for me, I'll tell you that. I'm doing that on the other 6 days of the week. I'm not doing that on Sunday. But for some people, it is relaxing. And of course, if you can, sleep in, take a nap, and encourage everyone in your household to do what refreshes them. And then finally, number four, isn't this legalistic? Well, no, because you don't have to do it. You get to do it. You get to do it. You're invited into the Sabbath. If you're observing Sabbath as a way to say, well, we have to do it in order to be accepted by God, then that's the same problem the Galatians had with circumcision. And we know that that's not what God's looking for. But in thinking back to the Galatian situation, while circumcision wasn't required outwardly, it was required inwardly. Paul says this in Romans 2. For no one is a Jew who is merely one outwardly, nor is circumcision outward and physical, but a Jew is one inwardly, and circumcision is a matter of the heart. By the Spirit, not by the letter, his praise is not from man, but from God. Circumcision was still required, but it meant cutting from the heart everything that keeps us from loving God and loving neighbor. Israel's Sabbath command doesn't apply to us directly. We don't keep it the same way that Israel did. But we still, and I'm not sure about this phrase, but we still optimize our lives for trust in God. We arrange our lives for maximum trust in God. And when we cease from our labors for a day a week, we're doing that. We're optimizing our lives for trust in God. We're receiving the gift of limits. And we're trusting God to take care of us. That's the heart of the Sabbath commandment. And that's what we're still invited into. Amen.